Thank you, Zach. So I'm not Molly Simmons. She currently is in another session. She won the student paper award for the law section, so she figured she better be there today to do that. But luckily, Zach and I are here to present this paper for her, so we'll carry on in her place. I have nothing to report, neither does Molly, but she did play a year of college hockey at Harvard, so she's put all New England hockey pictures in throughout the study. So that's her disclosure. So, we got a little preview in the previous couple talks about at the NCAA Data Collection Center, and we used the same 2009 to 2013-14 data. And while concussions were our main interest, there were too few specific to hockey for us to only focus a talk on that as well. So we looked at head, neck, and face injuries, but concussion, again, was the driving factor behind our study. And we had good data, and you saw Aaron's talk about the Daedalus Center, but we had information about the situation, the exact situation where the individual found themselves when they got injured. The mechanism of the injury, was it a collision injury? As we saw in our first talk, the answer is going to be yes a lot of the time. Look at men versus women and practice versus play. And we have a kind of natural experiment going on here, not a true natural experiment, but as we heard, the men's ice hockey is allowed to have checking in the games. Women's ice hockey is not allowed to have checking in the games. So I won't say that men's hockey and women's hockey are the pure counterfactual of one another, that you just change checking and that's it. Men are bigger and they're faster, so there's more kinetic energy involved in the sport. But again, we do have a semi-natural experiment going on here that men's hockey has checking allowed and women's hockey checking is banned. So, I don't need to tell you why hockey might be a dangerous sport for increased injury risk. It's fast. As you can see there in the men's hockey, checking is allowed. There have been no large-scale studies of head and neck injuries, head injuries, concussion injuries for hockey players in college. There have been other body location-specific injuries studies, and we wanted to look at that, look specifically at head and neck, face. I'll just refer to them as head injuries from here on out. And again, as I said, checking legal in men's hockey, not legal in women's college hockey. So we had data from the NCAA's ISP, which you heard about, and the injury rates were per 1,000 athlete exposures. We had over 150 team seasons worth of data. Not every team consistently volunteered to enter data over all the years of the study. We got 150 team seasons overall. Don't know how that is different than what I expected it to look like. But again, the way that the injuries were reported had to recur as a result of participation organized into collegiate practice or competition, required attention from athletic trainer or physician. Then the athletic trainer would report it to the system. That means we got a lot of information directly after the injury happened. There wasn't a delay, and so it wasn't like, what happened to you yesterday? I don't know. I was playing hockey, and I got hurt. So we got really good information about the injury, the circumstances, the mechanism, et cetera. So, again, only varsity-level practice and competition events. We have talked about previously the real-time electronic records application and then the number of student athletes. We do believe we have good detail on the number of players who are at these practices and games, so we think we have pretty good baseline data going into this. So, in the results, we had 496 men have 496 head injuries, head, neck, and face injuries to men, and 131 head, neck, and face injuries to women over the entire study period. As Aaron just showed us previously, the concussion rates were not statistically different between the two groups. However, we see some differences elsewhere. Men had a very high rate of lacerations, and women had zero lacerations to the head, neck, and face over the entire study period. I bet you know where this is going to be going. Looking at the mechanism, player contact, as we saw in our first study, high incidence rate of player contact for men versus women, much higher for men, and as you might have guessed, checking is where we see the highest incidence rate for men in head, neck, and face injuries. While it is not legal for women to check, that doesn't mean that checking doesn't happen overall. You can see the vast difference there, highly significant difference. We'll get into checking injuries a little bit later. But defending and general play were the other situations where we saw generally the injuries were occurring. And some injuries to women did happen during goaltending, where we didn't see any injuries to men in that sort of mechanism. So let's compare games versus practices. Concussions, much higher rates in games. I think this we would agree that this lines up with the previous literature. Not surprised to find more concussions in games versus practices. Contusions, lacerations, again for men, much higher in games versus practices. And then strains were another cause, but higher in games versus practices. As we'd expect, higher injury rates in games versus practices. Comparing mechanisms, practice versus games, player contact. Again, remember, for the men's games, these can be intentional contact, but for men's and women's, an unintentional contact can be a mechanism that we see. For both surface contact, stick contact, and board contact were other mechanisms that we saw for men. And then finally, just the situation itself, checking, again, for men, in-game, major cause of injury, defending, general play, and puck handling and goaltending were the other causes. But again, we see checking for men standing out as the extreme cause of head, neck, and face injuries for collegiate hockey players. So let's take a closer look at the checking injuries. Only specific, we looked at specifically those injuries that resulted from checking. The rate of concussion was much higher, 2.5 times higher in men than women. Again, women weren't allowed to check, so if they were checking, they were probably really intentionally breaking the rules to complete a check. For men, it is part of the game, but we still see a higher rate of concussions, and the total injury rate resulting from checking is much higher for men than women. And this is where concussion or lacerations were driven. No women had lacerations, the head, face, and neck during our study, but this is where we're seeing our lacerations for men. If you can see in that picture there, both of those gentlemen are wearing cages on their face masks. That's full face masks they have, but it's cages. You know, it's not as if they're hitting the ice or hitting the boards with their face and getting lacerations that way. These are cages. We might consider maybe putting up a clear plexiglass of some sort of other face shield that doesn't have these little bars crisscrossing, metal bars crisscrossing every way. Again, that would be another way to mitigate for injuries. If we know that a player's face is going to be pressed up against their face mask, maybe we could say, hey, this is something that we should intervene on. So again, discussion, vastly higher counts for men versus women, but the rates were slightly higher, men and women 50% higher for men. Checking contributes to a higher rate, particularly for concussions and lacerations. Games versus practices, head, face, and neck injuries were higher in games than practices. We did a sub-analysis of concussion grade. We didn't have great data on that, but I just want to bring this up. While we did see more concussions in game situations, we saw higher grades concussions. Now, we don't use concussion grades very often anymore. We try to stick with concussions are bad in general, but we did see some severe concussions, surprisingly, in practices. And checking, again, is clearly an issue, which I'm going to get to in 1 second. So the limitations of the study, again, inter-rater reliability is going to be an issue that we have. These are all trained athletic trainers, so it's not as if we're just getting someone reporting an injury in. They're certified athletic trainers. We believe they should be fulfilling the data information very well. But, again, inter-rater reliability might be somewhat of an issue. Hockey players might not be reporting injuries on time, as the saying goes, he got back in there, he's a hockey player. So it could be that players are downplaying these injuries, especially at the time of the injury. And if that's the case, we could see an undercount. And if we're getting undercounts, we might be getting more missing data. So that could be something that we're missing as well. And our athlete exposures that we had here, they included practices and games, but it didn't include other organized team activities, such as running sessions or lifting sessions. So if the athletic trainer wasn't at those, then those weren't being counted in with our athlete exposure. So that might be, in fact, over-reporting the rate because we're not getting the full injury rate or the full exposure rate. However, hockey players are going to be at much lower risk for face injury while lifting in comparison to when they're actually on the ice playing and practicing. So, in conclusion, further research is needed. There have been other situations, studies of injuries to college hockey players. Checking contributes to higher rates of players. Now, the first author of this study who played hockey herself says, you know, you can't take hockey out of the game. It's very, very important. It's very integral. And she told me that I couldn't suggest that we take hockey out of men's that we take checking out of men's hockey. So I'm not allowed to say that we should take checking out of men's hockey. But as we saw in the NFL and in NCAA football, the rules around tackling have changed. There have been rule changes. I think you would all be willing to hear such proposals to change the situations in which checking is allowed. I mean, we see the great increase in injuries related to checking, and we see the increase in concussions, and I think that we have a clear source of an injury. So if we can't ban checking, just like we can't ban tackle football in America, if we can't ban checking in college hockey for men, why should we not at least consider changing the situations where checking is allowed and being more serious about enforcing rules to make sure that checking-related injuries do decrease, because we know it can be done. So again, here's the references. Dr. Simmons is starting a new postdoc in a couple weeks, 2 weeks in fact, and you can email her, get in touch with her that way. She thanks you for listening, and I thank you as well.
Open floor to questions.
Yes. I don't know how that difference came to be. It might be the fact that, like, oh, women can't run marathons, women can't check in hockey. I don't know how that differentiation came to exist. Maybe others in the room might.
Yeah, I'm thinking Don or Tom. Might you guys have?
No. I mean, Don signals no. The origins of checking versus no checking, men's versus women hockey. I don't know. That's ever since I've known about women's hockey, I've known that to be the case. So it's not a recent occurrence. That's for sure. Yes, Dawn.
Great presentation. Thank you. Quick question. The lacerations that were due to checking in male hockey, did you do sub-analysis to see, were those accidental contact, or were they, like, is the stick getting through the cages, which would then lead to your proposal to have full face masks rather than cage face masks, or is that an accidental contact, which would mean that that's not the issue?
I mean, the cages are attached, so it's not as if they're like in the NHL, they basically wear a visor, and you can slip a stick going into an NHL player's visor is definitely a risk. These are fully attached, and so I don't foresee it being a common issue where the stick would get through there or detach the cage from, like, the bottom straps to open up. I mean. I didn't see that information. You'd have to ask Molly about that. She'll be back tomorrow evening for the party, hopefully. So you could talk to her about that then. But I don't have data on that myself personally. Yeah? Oh, did you have one?
Probably no room for seeing the pop related.
Awesome. Thank you for that insight.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.